7 proof. Got a nice golden brown. Got a little bit of a copper on the edge. On the nose, maple. Definitely maple, brown sugar. Honey graham cracker. Mm. The vanilla's there, but it's, again, like the others, nothing is hitting you over the head. There's not one thing that's coming out and whacking you, so...
This seems to be more well integrated, just like that second cream of Kentucky. It's just so well put mm-hmm. together. It's just everything is just flows into the other thing. It's just mm-hmm. it's just beautifully integrated.
Yeah, this one really tastes like a higher end Kentucky bourbon. Mm-hmm. You know, when you know this is Tennessee whiskey, but you really get the notes of a
still bourbon.
I know that, but you really get the notes of a good Kentucky bourbon on this one.
Do you guys really taste the charcoal filtration? Do you think it's different?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, in some of them, like in the lower proof ones, they give you like Gentleman Jack. You can taste the charcoal.
Yes. 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 Yes.
But, well, Gentleman Jack's been ultra mellowed.
Yeah. Right. Extra charcoal.
Right.
So, but does that, it's still bourbon, right?
Here's the thing. There were quite a few brands, especially back in the day in Kentucky, that were also charcoal mellowed. Yeah. I mean, there was the charcoal mellowing vats were still at Buffalo Trace until a few years ago, where they used to do early times or no, Dickel.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf, iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing. We've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right. Keep your eyes on the road, my darling. Wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows. My hand is yours forever, sweet love. Our eyes ahead on these back roads with a view.
Hey, and we're back, and we are discussing the 12-year-old Jack Daniel's batch number 3. What'd you think, Brent?
Yeah, this is definitely a step up from the 10. The 10 was good, and this one just like kicks it in a little bit more. You get that.
If really we didn't have the other two, you'd go, wow, this is the best one I've had all day, right?
Yeah, I'm going to say that. Exactly, you know? Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I also got the bananas on this one, which.
Because you're Brown-Forman.
Right, you know, and then, you know, I got some caramel, some fruits, and the oakiness comes out on this one a little bit more. You know, it's because of the age, you actually get those tannins that come on. Yeah, very much a step up. Very pleasant. I mean, there's nothing wrong here. You know, you just have to enjoy this one.
The only thing wrong is I don't have a case of it.
Yeah, well,
that's wrong.
That's wrong.
Yeah.
They're very stingy with this. For independent stores in Florida, we're getting bottles, not cases.
Did you get it?
It's not hard.
Did,
it's,
yeah. Yeah, they're, this, it's hard to find anywhere on the shelf anymore. You know, it's everybody's just snatching them up as quick as they can because it is that kind of a quality that everybody wants.
The dirty little secret is a lot of people are selling directly to bars in Florida. And
that's
bars
where we had one Thursday.
Bars are charging five times as much as you could get retail per
we had
shot.
This,
you know?
Yeah, we had this
five,
on
10 times as much.
We had this on Thursday.
We had
10,
14 not, arm? Not 12.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything's 14.
They gave me one bottle this last year in 2025.
How about one this bottle. Year, 2026?
Nothing yet in 26.
I was want cheap, your 2026 so one bottle.
Well, these came at the end of 25, so.
Yeah, they came.
Yeah.
They won't be released again.
Yeah.
Until the end of the year.
Yeah. But overall, a fantastic, really, really fantastic whiskey, this 12. It's just a shame because the 10's great, but it's just, it's a huge step up. It's fantastic. So, well, we're going to be giving the Jack Daniel's 12-year-old Tennessee whiskey batch number 3, 4 sips.
That's classified.
Y'all missing out on cream soda and cherry fry pie. That's all right.
I wish I had some fry pie. All right, Brent, take us home. Tell us about the last one we've got.
Okay, thanks, Bob.
We have to choke this terrible stuff down.
This is the Jack Daniel's 14-year-old Tennessee whiskey. It's 63.15% ABV, 126.3 proof. This is the first time since the early to mid-1900s that Jack Daniel's has offered an expression at this age. So now you have to just think to yourself, okay, they came out with a 10, they came out with a 12, they came out with a 14. Are we going to get a 16 and an 18?
Everybody's talking about it.
You have to think that you know that this might be the progression that they're going. You don't know for sure, but that's what you have to think. But on the color of this one's really a darker.
It's almost as dark as my heart, but not quite.
Yes, just about.
Nothing is that dark.
You have to find it first.
On the nose, I got a cherry pastry. On the palate, I got some pepper, brown sugar, cocoa powder, oak, a little bit of bitter dark chocolate, some pipe tobacco, some walnuts. You know what I didn't get? Banana. There was no banana.
It was banana absent.
The banana was completely absent on this one, which I found it, you know, prevalent in the first two.
Maybe I'm just talking myself into it, but I kind of get it on the nose. But because I know it's Jack Daniel's, if I did it blind, maybe I wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
You're right. I could be just talking myself into it, but that's normally a hallmark of Brown-Forman whiskeys, is that banana bread.
Right. And it's not here on this one.
Okay, okay.
So
yeah,
the finish on this just goes on and on and on. It just doesn't stop. The oak tannins are just perfect for this age. I really love this. I'm kind of worried that if they put out a 16, like, is it going to really be better? I mean, this is really good.
I thought 14 might be too old at first. Yeah. And when I tasted it, can they go to 16?
Good point, Harm. A lot of us thought about that because Jack has always been sweet spot 7 to 8.
Yes.
10 was old. 14 is very old. But honestly, this is fantastic.
We would love to find out.
It just goes to show you that advanced aging.
So you're
going to
make it, send it, and then we'll tell you what
advanced aging, depending on what floor of the Rick House is really been.
Yeah, so lower floors, you're going to get less angel share. You're going to get less a wood penetration. The heat is not as, you know, it doesn't, the temperature swings are not as drastic as at the higher floors. So at the lower floors, you can do this. This is great. I was really impressed.
You couldn't do this from the Angel's Roost with their single barrel selection. This would be...
Yeah, I mean, no. I don't think this is on the lower floor. It's at 126 proof. I don't know, but it's... I mean...
It's not in the roof, though.
No.
14 years at 126 proof?
Yeah.
It might be mid-floor, lower mid-floor. Floor.
Mid-floor. Yeah, mid-floor.
Mid-lower. It's going to be some lower stuff here.
Mid to lower floors, yeah.
I got some big... But cherries on this.
This is not
cherries. I got that cherry pastry on the nose.
This is not a single barrel whiskey, so you've got multiple barrels involved, right?
Right, right.
The finish is so long. The nose was interesting. It was like flat cherry cola, but the best flat cherry cola I ever smelled in my life, which just seems weird.
I don't like that note, the flat cherry cola.
It's me.
I get cola notes and I get dark cherries. Don't call that flat cherry cola.
All right, fair.
I think he's getting that note from his Canada Dry splash that he's got over there.
Let's see. Does it have one?
I mean, let's be
fair. Yes, it does. Yeah. Fair enough.
Let's be fair. It's not like his mom ever let him have an actual fresh soda. You know,
he only got the old Winn-Dixie. Stuff. Yeah. No, I got generic.
Quick check.
Yeah. Quick check. Yeah. If it was 10 cents, it was mine.
Oh, yeah. R.I.P. Winn-Dixie. They're closing them all.
Yeah.
Aldi's.
That's right. I won't miss a soda.
Yeah. Oh, you'll miss those childhood memories. Come on.
Not those specific childhood memories. I have other ones. I'd rather sniff glue.
Justin came from...
We've heard that about you.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a serial killer. You know, seems like the way he talks about his childhood. You could be a serial killer.
I plead the fifth.
Somebody bring the cadaver dogs to his house.
You really think that he's going to dig a hole? Come on.
Man. Yeah,
you got a point, Bob.
They go straight to the swamp. We're living in the swamp. That's how you get rid of a body.
Yeah, this is just, the color on it is beautiful. I mean, it's just got a ruby red rim to it.
I'm surprised you can get better than that 12. This is so good.
This has got the prettiest color of everything we've had
today. Yeah, until you get to this 14, and then you're
like... Don't give someone the 3-pack. Either buy them a bottle of 10 and leave it, Or skip the 10 if you're going to give them 12 or 14.
You buy the 3-pack, you give them the 10 and keep the 12 and 14.
That's right.
What's this hole in the box? Oh, don't worry about
that. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, this is nothing you need to be concerned with. Just move along, please.
I know. It makes you wonder.
And if you're going to sell that as a 3-pack, no royalties needed. Go ahead and do it, guys.
if they do come out with a 16, like, how is it going to be then, you know?
I'm afraid, look,
already at 14, I'm afraid we're already at the maximum amount of 10, and I need...
You think that, but, you know, when we were drinking that 12...
You don't know until you know.
When we were drinking that 12, you were like, is this really going to get any better, you know?
They can go lower floor and higher proof, and we'll still be happy.
Yeah.
Because we're all proof hoes.
Well, you're half right.
We say proof hound.
Oh, fine.
And you went with ho. Mm-hmm. And then the next progression.
If I got paid $1, I'm a ho.
Yeah.
You do it for free.
Yeah.
Well, I would.
That just makes him dumb.
I would. I'd also do it for $1.
Yeah, well. Well, we're going to give the Jack Daniel's 14-year-old Tennessee whiskey a well-deserved 5 sips.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank everybody for coming and joining us. Thank you, Brent.
Yeah, it was a terrible day, but somebody had to suffer through it.
And you put on a brave face.
I'm so impressed.
No pants, but a brave face.
Could have put pants on.
He could have.
Yeah. Thank you, Maury.
Happy to be here despite the hiccups.
Thank you, Justin.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
And thank you, Hart.
You know, Bob, I wasn't as happy to be here today because of the post-Valentine Day hangover, but I'm happy now, man. Thank you so much.
Amazing. We get some alcohol in him and he perks right up.
Yeah, right.
We're Sip, Suds, and Smokes. This is Madman Bob. Thank you for joining us. Remember, life is too short to drink bad whiskey. Unfortunately, today, that was not an issue. It's like the time he fell asleep and we tried to record him. I swear.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're listening to us online, do yourself a favor and tap.
Just tap it in.
The subscribe button.
Give it a little tappy. Tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
The easiest way to listen to our show is to ask Siri, Alexa, Google, Uncle Larry, or whoever it is that talks to you on your phone, play podcast Sip, Suds, and Smokes. We love your feedback, and you can reach us at info@sipsudsandsmokes.com. Our tasting notes flow out on Twitter and Instagram with our handle, @SipSudsAndSmokes, and our Facebook page is always buzzing with lots of news. You'll also be able to interact with the thousands,
millions, and millions
of other fans on those social media platforms. Do us a favor. Take the time to rate this episode if you're listening to us online. That's a big help to us, and we get to see your feedback as well. Come back, join us for another episode, and keep on sipping.
This has been a One Tan Hand production of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, a program devoted to the appreciation of some of the finer slices of life. From the Dude in the Basement Studios, your host, the Good Old Boys, will see you all next time.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. Jadru Lanham is a poet and ornithologist whose work intertwines his lived experience as a Black man in the American South and his love of wilderness. Both have taught him that joy is a source of strength.
I find my joy on daily walks around the farm or just sitting and watching some bird, and it doesn't have to be a rare bird. This past spring, I was just enthralled watching robins. It was like they were so happy that spring was here, they would just sit in little shafts of sunlight. I can see that bird. I can just see it, just sitting there in the middle of dooryard violets. I could see its eye blink. And then it opened that yellow beak and like yawned. And it didn't move. That was just it. It was just being.
It's easy to get so caught up in the hustle and bustle of modern life that we forget how to be present, or even take for granted that we're free to choose joy.
It sounds simple, but you have to grab it, you have to grasp it, you have to keep it. But however you get it, you turn to it as your superpower. And it's what keeps you alive from moment to moment.
Hear more from Drew in season 7 of our podcast, Bring Birds Back. For Bird Note, I'm Chazzy Johnson.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Franco-Ontarian singer-songwriter Mehdi Cayenne. Mehdi is one of 2 spokespeople for the Rendezvous de la Francophonie this year, and he will be crossing Canada on an RVF tour in March. Mehdi Cayenne was born in Algeria and grew up in Montreal, Moncton, and Ottawa, the city where he now lives. Mehdi and I spoke about his love of language, the importance of human connection, and his upcoming tour. Here's our conversation. Mehdi, what languages do you speak and how did you learn them?
I really speak English and French. I speak a bit of Arabic, but I really grew up speaking commonly French and English. And my parents are both Francophones, so in the house we would really speak more French with certain phrases in the Algerian Arabic. But at the same time, ever since it turns out that, as my mother told me, the first language in which I made full sentences was actually in English. Because when I was just a baby, I think we had a babysitter that was Anglophone. And then when we moved to Canada, very soon when I was at a daycare, it was at an early daycare in Montreal, and it was all Anglophone. And from being on the road and out into the world, and I guess from liking language a lot, some Italian and Spanish has seeped in, especially Italian, because I toured there, toured in Italy 2 or 3 times. So from having to learn that, really set it off. And also just the, that comes from my family as well. But, you know, I love language and the even when you're learning French and English, right, the correlations between the meanings of the same word in French and English and the differences and the nuances and stuff is the kind of stuff that gets my brain going. And so I find, that kind of pleasure with other Latin languages as well, of course, you know.
How has speaking more than one language enriched your life?
Well, I guess, language is a passport, right? None of us is fortunate enough to speak every language there is in the world. So any language and nuances within the language that one can sort of grasp and traffic in and sort of, weave into their experience or navigate. I guess that speaks to a feeling of belonging, right? When I think of language, I feel I don't just think of French and English per se, but the sort of different people and places. And cultures that one will be in contact with within that sort of passport, right? That sort of land it unlocks. And from there, Charlemagne said that speaking another language is like having another soul, which apparently is a quite known quote that I only heard recently. And I was like, yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it speaks of a way of seeing the world, how we speak about it, within language, there is that sort of perspective, I feel. And I guess when you talk about it, one feels short of having really plunged deep enough to really take in all the richness that brings. So I guess all those sort of conclusions I'm having here are more the, haphazard musings as we're tumbling through.
But with French and English, like, do you find that you use those languages differently or think differently in those languages to some extent?
Absolutely. I feel I have really prime seats to that fact from writing, because it's just, to me, writing is a way of discovering my mind and find out what I'm thinking about, how I see the world, how I feel, right? And just having that distinction of distinct read in both languages is really striking in its difference, you know? Just the way, I don't know, the way my brain constructs sentences and the belonging is different as well, I guess, to a degree. For example, my English is sort of copy-pasted from Spider-Man. And you know what I'm saying? There are no born members of my family that natively speak English. We've all learned it. So it's a different sort of existence but, you know, I guess that speaks to sort of my sense of patchwork identity as a whole anyways, you know?
What are the languages that your parents speak, just out of curiosity?
Well, French and English and Arabic more so. My mother learned Portuguese. My father seems to know quite a bit of German. Yeah, that would be the gamut.
So, as you know, of course, the theme of this year's Rendezvous de la Francophonie is activate your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in everyday life?
Making friends and going out into the world, right? And asking questions. Yeah, that's the way it resonates to me, right? It's the same way that we were saying language is a passport. If you take your passport and then you go around the place, meet the people, see how people live, what do people think about, you know.
So connecting to people is a way that you activate it.
I would say so. I would say even that it's more than the method, that is the objective as well, right?
Yeah, of course.
right. It's that's where the miracle comes in. I feel it evokes to me also the tour that I'll be doing across Canada with that premise, right? Is because there's just something special about showing up in a room where you know nobody and nobody knows you, and looking in each other's eyes and saying, "All right, here we go. This is what we're gonna do here together now," you know, and sort of sending a song, as it were, across the space, you know, and sharing that. So to me, that speaks of that activation. And I guess that the imagery of that is sort of like it is kind of like a ball, you know, you come in the room with a ball and you pass the ball and you hopefully get it sent back, you know, get a little game going. I feel it's similar with the energy in a room, right, with people, that sort of game you're playing. And I guess you're showing up saying, "Hey, you want to play with me?" Kind of like a proposal. So in a larger existential sense, showing up and proposing to hang out is the why and the what of activating that Francophonie, you know?
On the topic of the tour, what can people expect?
Oh, well, you know, it's a really multi-pronged slew of activities that's going down with RVF, right? So there's going to be screenings from the NFB in collaboration with RVF. There's a comedy tour. I believe there's an escape room tour. So within all that, what I'll be doing is I'll be touring songs of my latest album and of the album I'm finishing now, and I'll which will be fun and very energetic. And at the same time, I'll also be offering workshops. So I've given, you know, hundreds of workshops for tens of thousands of youth in the past. And in this premise, what we're doing is it's all predicated upon the idea of the advice one would give themselves to their younger self, you know. So, you know, because I think that's the, in keeping with that idea of passing the ball, going in a room and not just speaking, but asking the students, as it were, to speak up and share their own advice, really speaks to, you know, that activation. But it's also because we're, as you know, because we were supposed to speak when I was doing the reading for the script for the TV show we're going to do. The RVF are also doing a TV show with TFO in regards to the sort of road trip that I'll be undertaking. And that element of asking oneself for advice, giving advice to one's younger self, is sort of central to the idea of that TV show. Phew, that was a really long way of explaining, like, it all ties together, Catherine.
I totally get it. So March is the month of the Francophonie. So in your opinion, how can the Francophonie continue to grow and flourish?
Well, by growing and flourishing, right? And I think that, you know, the sort of main vector of that is simply that what constitutes Francophonie in Canada on this land has always been wide and has just kept growing. And the more we get to meet each other, the more we see everybody's place in the larger picture, you know? So I think that speaks to Francophones from the wider diaspora, such as in Africa, which is a huge berceau, a huge factor in the thriving of the French language, you know? And in a larger sense, you know, like, be it students that are in French immersion or various contacts with Indigenous peoples, that may be collaborating with French or living in French to their own ways. I think those are all vectors for growth. And I'm highlighting those sort of relationships because, in my view, it's true that it's easy to have blind spots in struggles for, so for example, in the French language struggle, you know, I think it's really useful to widen one's definition and sense of the landscape, you know, as far as not just what belonging in a Francophone culture means, but also how those Francophone cultures exist within a wider landscape, right? This makes me think, of course, of where I'm from in Algeria as well, right? The, you know, and various other similar ideas where it's the sort of subsistence of cultures and language and people, right? And that subsistence is a shared struggle, right? With all kinds of intersections of people's realities and existences and histories, you know? So I think the more that playing ground widens, the more there's an inevitable growth, you know?
Mm-hmm. So dialogue and...
Yeah, and
relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it bears repeating as well, because, I mean, it's no secret that we're in a wider context, in a rise of sort of, reactionary political ideals, you know, more of a sense of closing down the wall, so to speak, which is not even a metaphor, you know, and you know, I think that tremor that we all feel mostly, speaks to the importance of that, those connections being made even more so, you know, and being repeated as an objective, you know.
Thank you so much for this. And
thank you. My
look
pleasure.
Seeing you in Nelson.
I can't wait to go to Nelson, BC. I've been to BC before. I remember how beautiful it is. I'm very thrilled. So it was great to meet you. Thank you very much.
And you as well. That was my conversation with Franco-Ontarian singer-songwriter Mehdi Cayenne, who lives in Ottawa, Ontario. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thank you for tuning in.
You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In recent years, the price of electricity in the U.S. has gone up, in some states faster than inflation. But the price per kilowatt is only part of what determines your total bill.
Your bill depends on the price you're paying and then also how much you're consuming.
Ryan Ledeck is with the Brattle Group, which partnered with Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory to analyze electricity prices nationwide.
In a state like California, which has some of the highest prices in the U.S., parts of California also tend to have relatively mild climates, and California also has a history of pretty strong energy efficiency policies. So the average customer in California uses less than your average U.S. customer.
As a result, their bills are similar to states like Alabama and Mississippi that have lower rates but higher usage. In these and some other southeastern states, people use a lot of electricity for AC in the summer. Many homes use electric heat in winter, and these states have fewer policies and programs to improve energy efficiency. So even in states where rates have not risen as much, many families struggle to pay their bills, and helping people invest in energy efficiency can provide some relief. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.